This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by
Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
And Doucet Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Each year, a small Concord-based public policy think tank crunches the Granite State's biggest numbers: economic growth, wages, demographics, healthcare costs, taxes, and spending. Now, as we approach the end of 2014, the New Hampshire Public Policy Center has put out its latest report with an overall narrative that isn't that different from recent past years. Worry continues, for example, over the state's aging demographics and slow wage growth. But the report's authors also highlight some rising concerns this year: increased childhood poverty and extreme uncertainty about the future of health spending. The study is called What is New Hampshire? And this hour on The Exchange, we'll dive into what it tells us about the Granite State today and what it says we might need to think about long-term instead of the short-term policy-making decisions driven by our two-year political cycle. Let's hear from you this hour. How well do you see the state dealing with and preparing for some of these changes and challenges? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. With us in studio, Steve Norton, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. And Steve, it's nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
Also with us, Jeff Feingold, editor at New Hampshire Business Review and a longtime reporter here in the state. And Jeff, great to see you too. Thank you.
Great seeing you too, Laura.
And in a little while, we'll be hearing from Nick Tumpas, the Commissioner of New Hampshire's Department of Health and Human Services, on some of the big health spending issues that this report raises. But Steve, to you first. The Public Policy Center has been talking for some time now about how we're in a new era, leaving behind this long stretch of prosperity and population growth behind. So what is New Hampshire now compared to that earlier era that many of us remember?
Yeah, well, I guess the first thing I'd say is that the answer to what is New Hampshire is in flux for the first time in a long time. We have, as you said, been this incredibly fast-growing state for 30 years. You know, you think about back in 1968, there were 700,000 people in New Hampshire. There are now 1.3 million people. And so we've been in this period of incredible growth. And now the question is, what happens to a state that goes from 10, 15, 20% growth per decade to one that sees 1%? It's a real fundamental change in almost every policy topic. We have to rethink development. We have to rethink economic development. We have to rethink how our schools are being constructed. We have to rethink how we're providing health care.
So demographics is destiny, basically.
Demographics is destiny, but I'll also say that if you look back at the planning documents from 1968, they were saying the same thing we're saying now. We've got a workforce problem.
Really?
We've got an aging demographic. And then we had this big boon in the state. So I think the long-term question about what is New Hampshire being in flux is, what are the set of policy levers that local communities, state, are going to use to produce another period of economic prosperity for the state?
When did we see the change, Steve? Is there 1 or 2 years where there's kind of a tipping point in this demographic challenge?
We saw huge growth in the population in the 70s and 80s. It then declined in the 90s. And then further decline in the 2000s, and now projections are that it'll be flat or relatively small growth off into the future. So the 70s and 80s were really a period of growth. And what you see during that time period is amazing migration from the Boston area into suburban Boston, which included southern New Hampshire. And when you look at those maps, you see this big migration occur. And the question is why? And some people attribute it to better schools. There were the school riots that were going on in Boston at that time, lower cost of living. Some people attribute to taxes, you know, quality of life. All these things were part of that. And I think the question, again, that we have is how do we recreate that? If we want to have a fast-growing and prosperous economic community.
Yeah, what have you seen, Jeff, in your many years covering the state?
It's interesting to me because in reading this report, it just reminds me of, you know, I've been in the state for over 30 years, and it's these are issues that have been coming up, you know, for decades, actually. And it's in some ways, it's kind of disturbing that we really haven't faced them head on yet, which is, you know, like maybe at some point we will. But it's interesting to me to think about how New Hampshire has grown so much, did grow so much in the 70s and 80s. And a lot of that wasn't just people moving here, but it's also businesses, you know, big companies like Digital Equipment, you know, DEC. We had other big major tech firms came here. Southern New Hampshire grew mostly because people and businesses came from Boston, the Boston area, 128. And that's what we relied on. It was almost like we had forgotten that we needed Boston to thrive, to help us out. And Boston actually, in the Massachusetts economy, the Boston economy around Boston wasn't doing so well either at certain points in the last 20 years or so. And we've felt the effects, and I think that's part of the problem.
Steve.
You know, healthcare is actually an interesting policy concept to think about in terms of accelerating change. You know, we talk about what happened in the 1970s and 80s with DEC moving here. Well, what we've seen in the last 30 years is businesses that are creating commodities move overseas to cheaper environments. So the nature of economics has changed and it's accelerated. And in every topic, that's the case.
Yeah. And also, actually, this is not anything new to New Hampshire because we went through this with the textile and shoe mills. We had this. That was the great economic engine of New Hampshire for decades. But eventually they moved to the South, and then people
overseas.
In the South found they moved overseas. So this is not something new. It's a cycle we go through, and it's really something that we need to think about in terms of, you know, nothing lasts forever.
Well, and I want to dive into some of the details of this report, and there's a lot in here. So I think for the hour we'll be focusing mostly on the economic issues that you guys are raising, also the demographics, healthcare, because that's huge in terms of state spending and state overall quality of life. But before we do, just let me push back a little bit. And Steve, to you first, you know, this idea of New Hampshire's in decline and, you know, things are terrible. I know you're not saying that. But as you know, New Hampshire is also often ranked very high for low crime, high quality of life, great place to raise children, high graduation rates. You know, pick a number and chances are good New Hampshire will be on top or close to the top.
Absolutely. We did some work recently with the Business and Industry Association trying to understand some of the reasons for our competitive advantage and also our competitive disadvantage. And where we are look like we're having some problems is in terms of our future workforce. So in other words, we have very high graduation rates from high school, but we have very few of our resident population that actually go on to a secondary institution and get a degree.
Now, say that again, Steve, because that's important.
It is. So we have a very high graduation rate, which means we graduate our residents through high school, but then they don't go on to get a degree. And so we rank 24th in the country, whereas we rank 8th in the country with respect to high school graduation rates. So we're not educating our own.
Wow.
And that's a problem. And the other issue is that we have very low growth rates of 30 to 44-year-olds, which is the prime economic engine of most economies right now. And the third thing is that we have very high student debt, so for our residents. So we've got these three future indicators which say we've got some issues that we need to be careful of. We also have, you know, concerns about energy costs and healthcare costs because we tend to be a very high cost part of the country.
So you're saying not to put down those studies that show how well we're doing now in terms of these various measures, child well-being or graduation rates or whatever, the future indicators don't look as good.
That's right.
What about that? I'm struck by what Steve says, Jeff Feingold, that while we have great high school graduation rates, a lot of our young people don't go on to college.
Yes, it really is. It's kind of disturbing because the on the flip side of that, the student many of the New Hampshire students who go to college aren't going to college in New Hampshire. They're going outside of the state, and what happens is they end up staying outside the state, and that doesn't help in terms of that the demographic we're talking about, the 30 to 44 year olds. They don't come back. They might come back when they retire, or they might come back, you know, later on. But for in many cases, most of those people go on. They go elsewhere, whether it's to Boston or outside some other place where there's other colleges. And it's not sustainable for New Hampshire in terms of, we've talked about, this Stay Work Play initiative. There's other initiatives to try to keep young people in the state. It's something we've been aware about for a long time, but it's still continuing. I just wanted to say, I was a member of one of the committees in that BIA report. And I was on the education committee, actually, and it was something that it was eye-opening how many issues are involved in our education system and how many concerns there are.
Definitely
involving education in New Hampshire.
I definitely want to get to those this hour, for sure. But let me also invite our listeners to join us. The number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, we're digging into a comprehensive report called What is New Hampshire? We're looking at some of the trends that it covers, from the aging population to slowing economic growth to education policy, health care. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Here's another big jump out for me, guys, from this report. And Steve, I'll go to you first. The idea that these issues, whether it's, spending on education, college graduation, the healthcare system, some of the ones that we've touched on and will touch on, you guys write that while these require long-term thinking, the tendency is to make short-term decisions because of our political cycle. Give us a little more there.
So we have a $5.2 billion budget that is decided for a two-year period, so a little over $10 billion. And that's the major policy statement the state has about what it wants to do with the future. And we spend most of our time looking line item by line item throughout that budgetary process, because the trade-offs that have to be made to look long-term are very difficult, because we're not in an environment where there's a lot of additional resources to think about long-term strategic planning. So let's say we wanted to invest in our higher ed system or K through 12, we'd have to take some money from some other places. And those types of decisions are very difficult politically, as well as because they impact people in schools and communities. But that short-term focus, the two-year, plus the political difficulty of trying to make those trade-off decisions, make it almost impossible to look long-term.
Isn't that the case in every state, though, Steve? I mean, I know most states have a four-year governor instead of a two-year, but in general, don't most states run on that two-year political cycle?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that get in the way of that long-term strategic thinking. One is that our system of government is designed to stop that from happening. So in other words, a two-year governor, governor in council, a set of executive agencies that aren't necessarily hired by a governor can get in the way of that long-term strategic thinking. Whereas in other states, the governor has a four-year term, there is no governor in council, and likely when they come in, they're going to bring in their own leadership team.
Right, at the executive level, the top. Do you want to talk about that briefly, Jeff, and then we'll head into a break?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's interesting about this whole idea about our ability to look out long-term is I also think part of this is the revenue structure, because we have so, as this report points out, that we have so many different sources of revenue. It's like it's unique in the country, and the little bitty things. And I think that prevents us from really looking long term, because there's so many factors that come into play. It's very volatile.
All right. We will talk more after a short break, and we'll hear from Health and Human Services Commissioner Nick Tumpas on health care spending and the future of health care in the Granite State. 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at a recent report called What is New Hampshire? Looking at some of the trends that it studies. Also looking ahead at what New Hampshire might become if some of these trends continue, including slow economic growth and an aging population. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Among the challenges the report looks at in terms of all these issues is making long-range plans for health care, taxes, education, infrastructure, when our two-year political cycle fosters more short-term decisions. We'd love your questions and comments, thoughts, 1-800-892-6477. How well do you see the state dealing with, planning for, some of these changes that the report outlines? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. As we've touched on, health care and health care spending is a huge and uncertain concern in the years ahead. And joining us for more on that now is Nick Tumpas. He's commissioner of the New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services. And Commissioner Tumpas, thank you for taking time out for us. We really appreciate it.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, what drives your budget right now, the health spending budget here in the state of New Hampshire? What trends and needs are especially pushing your spending?
Well, clearly the Medicaid program is the largest program in the state, clearly the largest program in the department. And the Medicaid program is largely driven, the 30% of the population that we serve really drives 70% of the cost. That's the aging population, those with disabilities, and those with mental illness. And those three are the biggest drivers in terms of the cost of the program that I see right now.
And these are people who are eligible for Medicaid, that's health insurance for low-income granted status, already, Commissioner Tumpas. That's not including the Medicaid expansion.
It does not. The Medicaid expansion is a separate component of that. Medicaid expansion, at least until December 31st of 2016, is funded 100% for the service, is funded 100% by the federal government. So in the short term, that does not impact my budget from a services standpoint. Operations, yes, but not services.
Interesting. And, you know, you did receive a big boost in terms of state health systems, did receive a boost from the Medicaid expansion. What is that going to mean for your department? You said it won't affect you cash-wise anyway for a couple of years, but what about the work that you have to do?
Well, I think there's a number of very significant opportunities embedded in the New Hampshire Health Protection Program, which is New Hampshire's version of that. First off, what it does is it really gets at the heart of one of the most significant issues that face the healthcare system, which is uncompensated care. Because now as of yesterday, we have over 25,000 people enrolled in the New Hampshire Health Protection Program. So that means those people now, when they go to hospitals or other areas, they are not uninsured, they are not uncompensated for their care. Secondly, one of the most significant issues I think that's facing all of the state is the issue of mental health and substance abuse. And this is one of the areas, again, under the expansion, the services are going to be provided, do provide services for the mentally ill and for the first time, people to be able to get substance abuse treatment services, which is, I think, is one of the most significant cost drivers of everything across all state government, not just the department, but across all of state government.
Well, there's certainly been a lot of focus on the cost of substance abuse to communities, to police departments, to jails and prisons, never mind, you know, the pain of citizens who are going through this. I did want to ask you a question about that substance abuse, because more than one person in your field, Commissioner Tumpas, has said to me, you know, they're looking forward to having that substance abuse coverage because of the concerns that I just mentioned. Does New Hampshire right now, Commissioner Tumpas, have the substance abuse infrastructure, if I could put it that way, the folks to help people with substance abuse problems who all of a sudden will have coverage for the first time?
But for a short answer, the answer is no, but it's a great challenge. It's a great opportunity for us. What we've done in terms of implementation of the substance abuse benefit that is called for under the program is that we're going to phase that in over a year. So there are a certain number of services that started immediately. There's a set of services that will start 6 months into the program and then a year into the program. And what that does is it really reflects the fact that the infrastructure needs to be built up in order to provide those type of services.
Well, and that leads to my last question for you, Commissioner Tumpas, and I know you have to go. Is there a health care upside to an aging population to getting these services in place? I mean, could we be seeing a larger health care sector in New Hampshire, a sector that's a positive economic engine? I mean, health care jobs are typically seen as good jobs.
Well, there are a number of different ways to go about that. I think there's some great opportunities for our seniors in terms of being able to give back into the community. But I do think that the health protection program that deals with people up to 64 years of age, now we can get involved with people much earlier so that they have the opportunity for a better quality of life moving forward after they turn 65. As Steve has indicated in one of the reports that the center has done, the level of healthcare spending for the population over 65 is going to go dramatically over the next number of years.
Okay. Commissioner Tumpas, thank you for taking time out.
My pleasure.
That's Nick Tumpas, Commissioner of the New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services. You can join us, too, as we look ahead to what is New Hampshire and what might it become. We're looking at some of the underlying trends that have caused concerns among those who crunch the state's numbers. Are you concerned about the direction of our state? If some of those areas of concern are demographics, the economy, education, what do you think we should tackle first? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Steve and Jeff, Steve, you first, please. You do write in the report that there's tremendous uncertainty, to quote you, in the healthcare area. What's that uncertainty about?
Well, obviously, there's one big uncertainty, and that is how the Affordable Care Act might or might not change over the next 2 to 4 years. The Affordable Care Act is now being challenged, one of its central components being challenged by the Supreme Court.
The subsidies.
State new leadership in the state has indicated they're not interested in extending the Health Protection Act that Nick Tumpas had talked about, the Medicaid expansion, if you will, and that would obviously fundamentally change things that are happening in New Hampshire. And then just the nature of healthcare is changing so fast now. You think about the three North Country hospitals are trying to think about governance consolidation. There's collaborations, potential mergers that have occurred or have been talked about in the state, which really, you know, change the nature of community healthcare. Those are two areas that are significantly changing the nature of healthcare. And the third is this aging question. And, you know, we've talked about aging until we're all blue in the face about aging. But it really is going to have to reshape the way we think about how we spend money because it's shifting resources from one pocket to the other.
Well, and here's the question, though, is there, and I want you on this too, Steve, but Jeff, you first, is there an upside to an aging population? I mean, again, doctors and nurses who need to provide care to this elderly population, those are good jobs.
Yeah, those are good jobs, but a lot of the jobs that do one-on-one care for elderly people, those are not the best
paying
jobs.
Aids.
Yeah, and those jobs are not that they're not the good jobs, but they don't pay very well, and that's one of the concerns. Is that there've been many projections of what's happening in the healthcare economy, and we have a big healthcare sector, and it's only going to get bigger, but a lot of the jobs are going to be the jobs like home health aides, and not so much at the higher level.
Yeah, I think there's one way in which you can think about healthcare as being an export industry for New Hampshire, in the sense that we send a lot of people south of the border to Massachusetts, to MGH. Yeah. What if you brought those people back or kept them in New Hampshire? That's a growth opportunity. I think Elliott Hospital and others have been thinking about that along with Dartmouth. How do we build on this economic engine that's associated with aging? That's one component. And then there is obviously a fact that there's enormous social, human, and political capital with this group of people who are over 50 now, the baby boomers. And so I think there are upsides. I don't think we've figured out yet how to take advantage of them, but I think there is an upside, and we do need to look at that pretty carefully.
Well, I do want to ask you about that, Steve, but as a budget expert, when you talk about healthcare, you can't ignore the costs of Medicaid that are expanding.
Right.
And even though Medicare is a federal program, there are costs there too. Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
I just want to say one other thing about the cost of healthcare is that it's also reflected in the premiums that businesses and individuals pay, and it's
right.
Among the highest, or the highest in the country, New Hampshire premiums, because of the cost of our healthcare system, and that's something that's really been affecting businesses for many, many years now. I mean, energy is kind of overshadowing that lately, but healthcare has been at the top of the agenda for many years as just some kind of a concern, which also affects perhaps businesses coming into the state.
I did want to ask you guys one more question on this demographics and healthcare issue, and then we'll move on to some other topics. The state AARP recently put out a study called The Longevity Economy, and Steve Norton, they said, hey, there's a lot of good things about having an older population. They talked about the productivity of folks over 50, the jobs, the taxes they pay, the disposable spending that they have, which is often more than a person in their early 20s, for example. So are we ignoring the benefits of an aging demographic?
No, and I think what I've tried to say over the last 10 years is that we're actually in our economic prime right now. But we've got to prepare for what happens when we age going forward. And there are some important questions. Are there ways to extend the working life of individuals in New Hampshire, their participation in the workforce? That would make this huge group of baby boomers incredibly useful to the state. Could we create entrepreneurial opportunities for all these executives who have decided they want to be done with this particular career and want to start another career? So again, we're in our economic prime now. The question is, what are we going to do to extend that in a world in which we have all this social capital and human capital?
That's very interesting. So our business is thinking about that, how to deal with these coming retirements and tapping the potential of people, even if they aren't working,
exactly.
50, 60 hours
exactly.
a week.
And, but you also, not to be crude about it, but, we also need a pipeline of people who are younger who will become
right.
the 40s and 50 years old.
That's right.
That's looking out a little bit longer term. That's the concern.
It's tough, though, from a business standpoint, from a state budgeting and planning standpoint, guys. I mean,
there's so many immediate crises, Jeff Feingold, small C crises, but, you know, issues you got to deal with right now. I've got that deadline in front of me. I'll deal with mentoring and training the next generation, you know, next week.
Especially in the last few years with the recession and coming out of it, because that has really affected the way businesses, who they're employing, how many people they employ, what kind of benefits they employ. They've had job, you know, obviously been layoffs layoffs that were devastating in some industries for years. So it's businesses are coming, recovering now. Things look a little bit better, but it's still not at that level where they feel they can sit back and, you know, take a deep breath.
And I would say we do have some experience thinking long term as a state. And one example is that we generally try and support and help the North Country in this period of incredible economic transition. And there are long term strategic questions that we're trying to work with. What I've been puzzling over is, why don't we look south also? In some respects, that's been the source of a lot of our economic growth over the time, the last 30 years. Why wouldn't we think about, how do we build a southern tier, or the 93 corridor down through to Massachusetts, to make it interesting to millennials? How do we work with Manchester to make the Queen City a centerpiece of economic growth that then brings economic benefit and other benefit to the rest of the state? I think, you know, a southern tier initiative, I don't mean to call it that, but something that focuses long-term on the questions of prosperity.
That's really interesting, and you're right. There have been multiple studies on the North Country, its issues, what we should do for the future, and those are great, and we've done reports on that, but there hasn't been a Southern Tier initiative or what they call the Golden Triangle, sort of Concord, Nashua, Manchester.
We used to call it that, didn't we?
Yeah. Although I guess the impression is, guys, and Jeff, I'd love to hear from you on this, that, you know, those areas are doing okay. So given, again, limited time, limited energy, limited resources, let's focus on who's struggling.
Yeah, no, because if you look at the North Country, it's really in a situation economically that's really just very, very bad.
It's tough.
But if you do think about what Steve mentions in the report about focusing on the southern tier, that is a really good point. And just going back to the demographics part, another area where we could think about this in terms of bringing in younger people is, you know, immigration is something really important to help, not just for New Hampshire, but for the U.S., just bringing in younger people, because the U.S. as a whole is getting to be an older country. And if we have if you're looking for a younger workforce and a new entrepreneurial class, that's another area to explore.
Again, our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter. What are your thoughts about some of the demographic changes that we're talking about, their impact on the economy, on our healthcare system? What do you think is the best way to tackle some of these issues, especially given the tendency towards short-term thinking? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Tom sent us an email in Portsmouth. He says, the New Hampshire policy folks did a superb job in a prior study of the New Hampshire housing market. Would they care to comment on what this means for the state's tax structure? One of our, quote, advantages, says Tom, had been our tax environment. But is it possible what had been a tailwind, in other words, pushing us forward, Steve Norton, will now become a headwind due to our dependence on property taxes? Thanks, Tom, for the email. Steve, what do you think?
Thank you for the compliment, Tom. The work we did in housing really set up the question about what happens going forward when you have an aging population that no longer want 4 or 5 bedroom houses, and you have new families that want 2 or 3 bedroom houses. And so the older people are competing with the younger people for these smaller places.
The starter houses, we used to call
exactly.
them. Now we call them downsizer houses.
That's right. And no one wants those 4 and 5 bedroom places. So what happens to the underlying tax structure for communities? There is this question about how local communities are going to change their zoning and other things to reflect these new demand for services. And I think there is a possibility that, you know, when you combine this question of what happens to the housing market, the availability of housing stock that people want, and the declining number of children and therefore the increasing cost of educating them or the need to consolidate, that we're really headed to a real, almost a crisis in local governance in the state of New Hampshire, as we have to rethink, you know, the basic fundamental structure of how local areas make decisions.
Although there are some economic opportunities, right, Steve?
Absolutely.
In that housing situation, I mean, there's a giant old house in our neighborhood. We live close to each other, actually. It's huge. I mean, it's huge. And probably the people who lived there originally had 7 or 8 children. But now it's being broken up into smaller condos. And that's great. That'll provide a place for small families to live and it's an economic opportunity for the folks who are doing the rehab.
Right. But what if that house was in an area where multifamily housing was not allowed? And that's the rub. So many communities have zoning requirements that get in the way of that type of economic development on purpose, because there was a period of time where they wanted just to create these larger places. And I think that's the question that local communities are going to have to grapple with.
Interesting.
Yeah,
Jeff, go ahead.
You still have communities around the state that have, you know, 2-acre lot minimums, and you know, it's not feasible in terms of having things like workforce housing, which
and
is
someone
a
who's
big
65
issue.
Doesn't want to mow a 2-acre lot.
No, absolutely, absolutely, and that's a concern. Is that I think in some cases, Tom raised an interesting point, because I think we haven't really thought about what the whole property tax system and the housing structure, the way everything is done today, has been grown, and over the last 50 years, it's not adapting to the needs of what we have today, because there is a great need for cheaper housing, because that's one way of keeping younger people in the state.
Well,
they can't find the housing, but if you have cheaper housing, maybe they can stay.
Well, and it keeps getting back, Jeff, to what we said earlier, demographics is destiny.
Yep.
I wonder, as someone, again, who's been especially in close touch with the business community, what you think of this idea that Steve puts out, you know, why not a Southern Tier initiative, looking at the strengths of, you know, that part of the state?
I think that's a really interesting point, because, that's one of the things about the New Hampshire philosophy. If it's working, you know, then let's not mess with it. And that's pretty much what has been happening in the Southern Tier. You know, it for so many years, it was the economic engine of New Hampshire. It's what made our economy the way it was. It's an interesting thought. I had never thought about it until I read it in the report. I said, that's a really interesting thing, because there are issues involving many of the cities in the Southern Tier that need to be addressed, you talk about the crime in New Hampshire is low, but not necessarily in some of the cities in the Southern Tier. Let's look at that. But as we've said a few times already on this show, it's hard to get the focus of the policy people and the elected officials, because we have so many other pressing needs that have to be addressed immediately.
Sure, and in fairness, there's always something staring you right in the face, so it's easy to ignore the thing that's staring you a little bit further off. Some of the Southern Tier communities have been dealing especially with issues concerning their public schools. So we'll talk about education coming up in just a moment. And taking more of your calls and emails, Tom, thanks for that one. The number 1-800-892-6477. More on The Exchange in just a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, Washington Post Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist David Finkel is with us on his book covering Iraq War veterans. That's tomorrow on The Exchange. Join us for that. Today, what is New Hampshire and what might it become? We're looking at some of the numbers in a recent report by the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. Join us as we look at some of the changing demographics and economics here in the state and how New Hampshire might return to the prosperity that it saw just up until recently. We'd love your thoughts, ideas on that. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Steve Norton is here, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies, along with Jeff Feingold, editor at New Hampshire Business Review and a longtime reporter and editor in the Granite State. And gentlemen, let's go back to our listeners. Bill's calling in from Gorham. Hi, Bill. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. Very worthy and interesting discussion. My thought is, and it's already been alluded to rather strongly, is the importance of our education system, our education for our youth and others going forward in post-secondary education, and how few are going there. I think what needs to be part of that discussion is that's going to stay as it is until we change how we fund our educational system, our universities, and even our tech schools. And I think we all know that right now the state is at has no resources to do anything other than what it's doing now. And so I think a very relevant part of this discussion needs to be is how we fund this state and how we fund those very important things that need to be done going forward.
And Bill, you're talking K through college or K through 12?
College and K both, actually, all of the above, but primarily college. We're about last in the country in terms of supporting the youth going to school. And just a side note, I have 6 children. 5 of them have degrees. 3 of them have advanced degrees. And guess what? None of them are residing in the state.
Wow, Bill.
So that, and two of them have their own businesses. One employs about 30 people. So that's just an example of what does and can happen if we don't start changing how we, I think, fund the state and fund our educational system.
Wow, Bill, you are the poster child for the show today. I'm so glad he called. Thank you so much, Bill. Jeff, what do you think? Here he is. Yeah. He's the absolute poster child for what we're talking about. He's got six children. They all are well-educated, and they're not here. And by the way, if they were here, they might bring some of that entrepreneurial smarts that he talks about to create jobs for other people.
Yeah, full disclosure, my children both also didn't stay in the state. They went to school out of the state, and they've stayed. They're actually both in New York City now. And that's where a lot of young people are for reasons. You know, New York is attractive, just like Boston is. But I think he put his finger on it, is the concerns are really, in a lot of ways, revolve around the education system in the state, from K through college, because that is an area where we've spent so much time talking about it, but not really address the key concerns, the key needs. If you have to, Steve mentioned that we have the highest college student debt in the nation, what that does is discourage people from continuing to pursue their degrees. And if they do, they end up with this huge debt. If they stay in the state, that means they can't buy houses, or they can't, you know, they can't invest in something else because they're limited in what they can do because they owe so much money right off the bat. There are concerns in terms of the education that students are getting from district to district, because we have so many school districts. We have so many different, I mean, we talk about Common Core and all that stuff, but really in terms of what the quality of the education kids are getting all over the state has a lot to do with the property values of that state. This is not something new coming out of my mouth.
No.
But this is something else that we've kind of swept that one under the rug because we move on to issues. We've dealt with the Claremont thing, not really, but we've thought we've got that. Let's move that. Let's talk about healthcare. Let's talk about Medicaid. We're not spending time really concentrating on these issues.
Yeah, so let's talk about the college issue first, and maybe we can dive into some of the K through 12. And again, thanks, Bill, for the call. What are some of the key points in this report, Steve Norton, about the higher ed problem, if I could call it that?
Yeah, well, I guess I would say that it's a tough place to begin the conversation about funding, because I think there is there's probably very little chance that we're going to see significant increases in revenues for any particular policy topic in the near future because of the revenue situation and the recession, et cetera.
Yeah, we're talking deficits and cutbacks already, and the budget season
exactly.
hasn't started.
So I think a good place to start the conversation is maybe, you know, we've got a lot of great educational assets in the state. We also have some problems, and those problems are declining enrollment, declining number of kids across the country. We've got a real question about the value of higher ed in terms of how do you assess it, not whether it's important, but how do you assess this institution versus other institutions. And so I've begun trying to think about how you rebuild our confidence in our ability to understand that value and then have the conversation about funding. So in other words, we know that UNH has seen significant increases in enrollment. We've also seen Plymouth significant declines in enrollment. What does that tell you about the system of higher ed and how we want to think about that going forward? And are we producing students who go off and get good jobs? If we have that information in hand, then maybe we can have some conversations about funding and what we want the system to look like.
Interesting. So you're saying even with all the data out there, and it's certainly a data overload world these days, we don't have enough data to really accurately assess what is going on in higher education in this state.
That's right. And people get very frustrated in the educational community when we talk about ranking institutions. But I think ultimately there is going to have to be some better assessment of the value of our spending on higher ed.
Well, yeah, one of the other issues around this is that, you talk about getting people educated and they have some skills to do a job. But the thing is, what we need to do is think about what kind of skills do businesses want. The business that we like, that we want to have here, like smart manufacturing, which is mentioned in the report. I give you the example of Albany International, which came here, moved here from Albany, New York. They're over at on the Seacoast area, and what they're doing is they're working with Great Bay Community College to actually train students to take the jobs that they have, because these are really good paying jobs. But that's not unique, but it's something that's not happening that often in New Hampshire, and it's a good example of how we can kind of figure these things out, because these aren't jobs that require bachelor's degrees either. They just working. They get work in community college. They don't have to go on to UNH, but they go to Great Bay, and then they can get a really good job. It's the way it used to be in the mills, actually. With limited education.
That used to be the way it was in the 70s and 80s. It was a firm, Dartmouth Printing, that had built out a relationship with a community college up there to train its workers in the 1970s. Yeah. And, you know, UNH right now has a very big initiative in Manchester, building out a high technology corridor in the Pandora building, working with Dean Kamen, yeah, to try and develop a pipeline, but also, I think, also develop an institution that becomes a draw for people and individuals to come there. So I think, you know, there are things that are starting through unique leadership at UNH, through unique leadership through the community, yeah, college system, through businesses like New Hampshire Ball Bearing that are working with community colleges, Hypertherm. And Albany and Joe Marone at Albany. So I think there are lots of things that are starting to bubble up about, you know, creating the educational system of the future. We're not quite there yet, but we're almost
there. There's a lot of talk about, yep, it, though, and a lot of energy, right, efforts, yep, private-public partnerships, so that's good to see. Jeff, go ahead.
We had an interesting op-ed a few issues ago from someone who said, you know, is a bachelor's degree overrated? Because are those really the jobs? Do we need to have a bachelor's degree to work in a high-tech manufacturing company? Probably not. If you're an engineer, sure, you need more than that. But if you're working as someone who's assembling something or one of those other jobs that are good jobs, you don't need to have a bachelor's degree, and that also plays into the cost of higher education.
I was at a meeting recently where the president of Albany used a phrase which I thought was fantastic, and that is that the reason he's here in New Hampshire is because he felt like, at least for the next 5 to 7 years, there was a vital intellectual infrastructure that he could utilize.
Workforce.
And that was his competitive advantage. And so I think one of the most important questions that, before we get to the question of funding or anything else, is what does that look like? What do we want to look like it? How do we want to focus our energy? And what does that mean for then a question of how we allocate our resources?
I do see, as I said a minute ago, a lot of energy, interest, businesses stepping up, organizations stepping up, the public sector stepping up in terms of making those connections between high-tech manufacturing jobs, good jobs, as you keep saying, Jeff Feingold, and training the next generation for them. What I don't see yet, anyway, is the training for this healthcare workforce that we keep saying we're going to need because of the aging demographic, because of the increased coverage, Steve Norton, that people are going to have under expanded Medicaid. So it seems like everybody's focusing on high tech and STEM, and that's great. But who's going to, you know, change the bedpans at the nursing home? Who's going to diagnose and treat all the diabetes and other diseases that come on with aging? Who's going to help the folks who say, hallelujah, I have substance abuse coverage for the first time ever, but I can't find a counselor? I mean, I just see so much emphasis on one end and not enough on the other end.
Yeah, and that's been brought up recently, increasingly, because most of the focus on STEM is in the short term. And, you know, to run a big business in New Hampshire, you need good HR people, you need good IT people, you need the workforce that's going to take care of the elderly. So there are a whole different set of workforce issues that you need to deal with.
All right. I just wanted to put that out there and wonder if you guys have heard the same sort of interest in one area and less activity around another area.
That actually goes back to what we've been saying, that people focus on one thing, they're not looking at the big picture necessarily.
All right. Well, let's take another call. And again, I'm glad Bill and Gorham called because he highlighted a lot of the issues that we're talking about. Here's Jonathan in Manchester. Hi, Jonathan. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, Laura.
Morning.
I think one of the things that's failed to address, we talk about high-tech jobs that aren't being filled by people from within the state. Obviously, they're bringing in people for some of those jobs. But the big drag on the southern, that I noticed from the southern part of the state, especially a city like Manchester, is a large young population that's unemployed. They're also uneducated. So what they need is better than minimum wage jobs. The minimum wage here is not going to enable anybody poor to pull themselves out at all. And cheaper housing. It's an unfortunate thing, but that is going to be the drag on the state if the only young people are unemployed and working at minimum wage, and the old people are all retired, or people are moving here with retirement to save by not paying taxes here. There's nothing to sort of bail out this population that isn't educated, that can't get back and forth. I haven't been able to find work here since moving back. I've had to work out of New York and Boston, and I'm trying to create a business here in New Hampshire, and I will. But it's been very, very slow and plodding because there's just nothing on the low end here. You can sort of see that stagnation here.
Stagnation in terms of housing or younger folks who don't younger have a college education?
Yeah. With not the college education, I mean, if you're going to have to deal with that population, how are you going to lift them up? They need to be, they're not going to be able to, now that they're in their 20s and 30s, either you're going to have to retrain them or you just need better jobs for either manufacturing or don't require a higher education, because that's going to be a drag on the tax system anyway. If that's the big part of the population that you can't lift out, and you guys are only talking addressing high-tech jobs that you'd like to dream about being here, then how are we going to actually lift out the people that did stay here or were stuck here or whatever it was with the younger population, ones that didn't go to New York, that didn't leave the state after they got educated?
Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for calling, and let's talk about this. Wow. Okay, so K through 12 and some of the issues, Steve, that Jonathan, our caller, raises.
Wow, that's a big question.
Lifting people up who don't have the means to, you know, get that terrific college education, for
right.
example.
And, you know, basically in New Hampshire, there are two areas where we have real weakness. One is in the lower end and one is in the higher end of jobs. So we've got high-skilled folks that are working here. We've got some low-skilled folks that are working here. Most of our population is in the middle, and we tend to focus on these high-end jobs. So that's absolutely true. There are literally thousands of jobs in the healthcare world that are going to be coming up. And how do you train folks or how do you get folks interested in that? Absolutely critically important. There are thousands of jobs that are going to be coming forward for HVAC, which are all the mechanical engineering that folks do around air conditioning and buildings, because that generation of folks that had trade degrees are retiring. So there are, and in Manchester, there are initiatives that are going on, and I assume there are in other communities as well at the community college, where they're creating a track from the high schools into the community colleges, which are training folks that might otherwise only experience these low-income wage jobs. So there are some initiatives. I'd be interested in hearing Jonathan's take on the business construction that he's trying to do, the work that he's trying to do. Does he not find the right number, the right skilled people? That would be an interesting story as well.
Yeah, and also it raises an interesting point, because there are jobs available right now in New Hampshire. I know even in the construction industry, which hasn't been doing so great in the last few years, but there is a demand, as you say, Laura, for people like who have skills like plumbers, electricians. This is a need that, because there are so many of those people who have those skills are older and are, you know, towards the end of their careers, and there's a need for young people who are looking for a good job, but they don't, for some reason there's no connection there. I'm not quite sure if it's the secondary schools, the high schools that aren't really connected to that, don't understand what's going on, but and these are jobs that you can get without having to go to college. You become an apprentice, you get your skills. I've hired plumbers and electricians. You can learn really good at living doing that, but that's something that we don't think about. I apologize, which things sound like we're focusing on only high tech jobs, but there are a lot of jobs that are needed, a lot of skills that are required that aren't that for some reason young people in the state aren't really aware of them.
Yeah, I can't remember who said this, but somewhere in travels around the state, someone said there's no such thing as a low tech job anymore.
You have to have some level of technical.
You can't be an auto mechanic without understanding how to use computers and how to interface with cars that you plug them into a computer and you work with that. You know, most of the work that Hypotherm does, I'm not sure I could do, because I'm not trained in those computer skills now. So even though they're, considered to be what used to be considered blue-collar jobs. So there is no low-tech job, I think, now.
Well, Jonathan, thank you for calling. And we don't have time to address everything you raised, including the housing. But we have done shows on that, well aware of it, including a show we did with you, Steve Norton, I think 6 months ago, on that housing infrastructure.
That's
so,
right.
Jonathan, thank you very much. And sorry we don't have time to address all of your issues. You know, Jeff Feingold, you've talked a lot this hour, as did Steve Norton in his study, about how we focus so much on the immediate crisis in front of us. And that's human nature. I mean, it's understandable. I'm guilty of the same thing. But if you could pick one thing that you would love to just sort of grab policymakers by the shoulders and say, look, focus on this for a year, please, what would it be?
I think it would be education. I think that's a major concern. I think it addresses so many of the issues we've talked about in terms of the workforce, in terms of keeping young people in the state, and having them have the skills to get good jobs.
Yeah, because that's
the fundamental thing. And if you have the workforce, then businesses will say, oh, look at that great cohort of workers there. I'm going to move up to New Hampshire.
So if these individuals are prospering more than they might have
And I also have to argue the education system is the public education system is really is take has borne the brunt of failure on you could argue the state in dealing with social services issues and all those things. The schools are the ones who are dealing with those things.
Yeah, and Steve, real quick, if you could just take people by the shoulders and say, focus on this for a year.
Yeah, what does a 21st century Southern New Hampshire look like, and how do we think about that as a state?
All right. Great to see you both. Great to talk to both of you. Steve Norton, thank you very much.
Thank you, Laura.
Steve Norton, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. Jeff Feingold, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Jeff Feingold, Editor at New Hampshire Business Review. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. The senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our intern is Nate Graby. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.